Hi, and welcome to the Adaptation Station podcast. My name's Nicole. I'm a former special education teacher and currently a board-certified behavior analyst working at a private center. The whole goal of this podcast is to help you with balance. So you'll have some episodes helping you at work and other episodes helping you outside of work. I hope you guys are excited to dive into today's episode. Let's get started. Welcome back to today's podcast episode. And all of my experience is as a special education teacher and now as a board certified behavior analyst, but it is so important to get the input from lots of different voices, which is why I'm so excited for my co-host today.
Oh, hi, Nicole. Thank you for having me on the podcast. I really appreciate this opportunity to share a little bit about my family's journey in the field of autism.
Yes. And it's Vida, correct? Am I saying that correctly?
It's Vidya, V-I-D-Y-E, Vidya.
Yeah. And so Vidya has a child with autism, which is why we're so excited to have that parent perspective. So can you go ahead and give us just a quick snapshot of your journey? Because as I always talk about, we decided to enter the field of special education for our career, whereas you just kind of found yourself in the world of special education through your child. So you have a very different journey than I did. So do you mind sharing a little bit about your journey and your family's journey?
Sure, Nicole. So my journey into the world of autism started almost 15 years ago when my son was 3 years of age. We had started seeing skill regression in him around 18 months of age. But both me and my husband, we were unaware of autism at that time. But my mother-in-law, she's a special education teacher in the U.S., and it's she who first brought it to our attention that our son, Arian, might be on the autism spectrum. So that's how basically my journey into the world of autism started. So we used to live in Canada. Now we live in U.S., but prior to this, we used to live in Canada. So when we came to know that there was a possibility of Arian being on the autism spectrum, we took him to our pediatrician and expressed our concerns. So the pediatrician then took our concerns very seriously and sent Arian for an assessment for autism, which in Canada can take up to a year because there is a long wait list to get a diagnosis. So even though we saw the signs around 18 months of age, Arian was not diagnosed formally till he was 3 years of age. So basically, that is how everything started for us. So I went from being a parent who had absolutely no idea as to what autism was. And today I have my own blog, I have a podcast, I have my own social media accounts, wherein I have learned so much in all these years in raising my own son that today I'm able to share that knowledge with other parents through different mediums. And I'm very happy that the information which I share with my with other parents is very helpful. Today, my podcast, which is Autism Family Story Podcast, is heard worldwide. And I get a lot of feedback from parents all over the world, which is so nice to see because I try to explain the things from a parent's perspective, which is so important, without the use of any jargons. Because for me personally, I did go back to school once my son was diagnosed, but that is not the case with everyone. So in order for the parents to understand, it is very important that the terminology used is very simple. And also parents are very busy, you know, these days, everybody is working, they are busy with their kids' therapies, taking them around to different activities. So I try to keep my podcast very short and sweet, wherein maybe under 10 minutes. So wherein I try to take a topic every week, especially my podcast episode gets released every Wednesday. So I take a podcast topic, some of which it's in my, I share my own experience, whereas in some others, I get requests from parents from all over the world. Hey, Vidya, can you talk about this? So then I make it a point to include those topics. So that is useful for a wide age group of parents.
Perfect. And that segues into my first question for you very nicely. Now, like you mentioned, your son is 18 now, I think.
He will be 18 in November, this November.
So you've been in this role for a long time. But thinking back to when he first got identified, What could the professionals that you worked with have done to better support you as you first got immersed in this world?
So there are a couple of things which I would have liked to see when Arian first started on this journey. So basically, when Arian was diagnosed with autism, what I was seeing is that we were always given a negative feedback of all the things which Arian was not able to do. And, you know, so that was kind of demotivating because as a parent, you already know your child's strengths and weaknesses. So I already knew the things which Arian is not able to do. But I also wanted to hear from the teacher something, you know, which he did positive on that day. Maybe a simple thing, you know, as to maybe he took out the lunch bag, his lunch bag from his lunch from his backpack. That's a very small thing, which might mean nothing to the teacher or to others. But as a mom, to me, that makes a big difference because, you know, for me, I know how much hard work has gone into Arian to learn this one's basic skill. So, you know, I would have really liked if the teachers would have highlighted the positive alongside the negative and not only tell us the things which Arian was not able to do. So that was one thing. The second thing is, as I mentioned earlier, Nicole, I went back to school once Arian was diagnosed. So I went and I did my autism graduation certificate in behavior science. So I had that background. So even though I didn't work in the field professionally, but I was working very hard at home with my son. So Arian was doing part therapy and partly he was going to school. But, you know, as you know, our children take a long time to learn a skill. So there were lots of things, you know, Arian never got a chance to complete in the ABA therapy, which was provided by the government. Prior to his diagnosis, we started the therapy on our own, where we were spending our own money. But at that time, you know, Arian was only able to handle an hour of therapy. He was not able to handle 5 hours a day or 40 hours a week, which is normally recommended. So we started with what Arian could do, and then slowly we started adding to it. So, you know, I totally understand that classroom and home are two separate environments. In the home, you know, you can control the environment, you can control the sound, you can control the noise and a lot of other things. But in the school, Arian was in a elementary class with 5 students and a teacher and 3 assistants. So, of course, you know, every child in that class had different needs. So, you know, it was very difficult for Arian because he is non-speaking, as you already know about it. And, you know, he gets very overwhelmed and anxious when he hears loud noises, sounds in the classroom, other students' behavior, because Arian is a very calm kid. So Arian has a lot of sensory issues like toe walking. He has a lot of hand flapping and a lot of rocking. So those are the difficulties Arian struggles with, a lot of stimming behaviors. So what used to happen is the teachers always used to write and tell me, Arian is not able to do this. Arian is not able to do that. But at home, I was exactly seeing the opposite because I was putting in the work with him and I was noticing that, you know, he is able to do the task, you know, maybe only if it's only 3 minutes in the beginning or 5 minutes in the beginning. So one day, you know, I told this teacher, if it's okay with her, I could get a bunch of tasks and show her what Arian is capable of. So I took, you know, she was kind enough to allot me 30 minutes for the meeting. I took a bunch of tasks because I taught Arian at home to work independently, literally started with 10 seconds. And slowly I was able to finally get him to around 5 minutes where he was able to work independently without any help. But then when I was hearing every single day from the teacher, he was not able to do that in the school. It was very disheartening for me. Because again, I do understand the limitations, but I knew that Arian was capable of doing it. It's not that he was not capable, but of course there was different problems in the school. So I took a few tasks to the school. Maybe a 5 or 6 tasks. I arranged all the tasks. Arian's class teacher and the para who was working with him at that time, they sat and they saw that Arian was able to complete all the tasks in under 5 minutes without any help. And they were really surprised to see that. I think from that point of view, the teacher's opinion, the para's opinion about Arian changed because now this time around, it was not me, a parent, telling them what my son was able to do, but they seeing with their own eyes what Arian was able to do. So from that point of time, Arian's teacher started pushing him and then we were able to see a lot more progress.
That is awesome. And that is such an important thing to have that relationship with a teacher and a parent where you were welcomed in to be able to showcase that. So you mentioned that and you mentioned more positives. What are other things that teachers or service providers can do to kind of foster that process with you and how they can help you feel seen and heard when you're talking about your child?
So basically what I would like to advise the teachers is that in the beginning of the year, take time to know our child. Take time to build that relationship with us. You know, because parents, we are the experts on our children. We spend the maximum time with them. We know their strength and their weaknesses. So what I want to tell the teachers is, don't base your opinion just because some other teacher told you, oh, this student is not able to do X, Y, Z. So take that time to know the student. Take the time to know their strengths and their weaknesses and have that open lines of communication with the parents. So that way, because at the end of the day, both the teachers and the parents, we are working for a common goal, which is to help our kid. So that should be the center point of discussion. And it should, and I'm always saying this, that, you know, maybe there will be times when we will not agree on everything. That is normal. But then the thing is, we don't have to make it ugly. We can still have open lines of communication and we can do everything to settle the dispute amicably, because at the end of the day, it is going to help the child. So my advice to the teachers will be to get to know the child and make the opinions on their own. Don't listen to some other teacher, because you know how in special education classes, one teacher can have the child for 3 or 4 years. And then, you know, they form an opinion and unknowingly they pass it on to the next person. And then that person, you know, it's not their fault, but it's a human nature. We, you know, they try to judge the child based on the other teacher's observation, which is not fair to the child. So get to know the child and, you know, have an open relationship. Now, I understand teachers are busy, you know, I don't want to disturb them during their instruction time. But say if I write you an email, you know, even if you can't reply the same day, you know, try to make an effort to get back to me, whether it's a simple text message or just a simple email. So that way our lines of communications are always open.
I think those lines of communication can be really tricky for teachers to kind of figure out that balance. I know that was one thing I had a hard time with. So I'll use one specific example. When I would have behavior problems occur in the classroom, I was so concerned about making sure a parent didn't feel guilty that I almost danced around or sugarcoated what happened. So then the parents didn't have a clear picture of what was going on in the classroom. And like you said, parents have a ton of insight. So if I had been more honest and was like, hey, I'm seeing X, Y, and Z, the parent might have really valuable feedback. So if you are a teacher who is needing to call home about a concern, do you have advice on how they can approach that conversation where they are being kind and considerate, but they're also being really honest and direct?
Sure. So, you know, getting a call from your son's teacher, you know, sometimes it gets a very negative, you know, impression. It doesn't have to be that way. So, sure, you know, as a parent, I would definitely like to know if my son is, you know, having any issues at school. Because like I said, we are the experts on our child. So maybe there are some strategies which you are doing at home which are helpful for the child, which the teacher might not know about. So yes, so there are two things. The teacher should definitely call home. But, you know, instead of first starting with all the negatives, maybe, you know, just start with something positive, something little, you know, what your child did during the week or maybe on that day. And then, you know, add to as to why you were calling, say it's a behavior issue or maybe some other issue. So that way the parents, you know, they don't get on the defensive. So they understand that you're there to help the child and you're, you know, communicating not only the bad, but also the good. So that way, I think, you know, the parents will be more open to that feedback because they have a right to know if something is, you know, bothering their child or if their children are, you know, exhibiting challenging behaviors or anything is happening at the school. And maybe they might have some strategies which they might in turn tell the teachers, who knows, you know, and maybe together the teacher and the parent can brainstorm and come up with a solution to help the child.
And I think we kind of already touched on this, but that was one of the biggest things I had to learn is if the first time you're calling home to a parent is to say there's a problem, you're already calling home too late. If you take the time to be communicating on a weekly basis about all of those positive things, it just makes it that much easier when something does pop up that you need to discuss because you already have that communication flowing with the family.
So I so agree with it, you know, because, you know, you have that relationship, you know, with the teachers. So definitely, I think then it goes both ways, you know, the teacher will be more open to the feedback and the parents as well. Than just waiting for that one phone call.
Exactly. That being said, even our best, well-functioning IEP teams still might have conflict like you talked about. So what do we do when we have a conflict regarding something in the IEP or a strategy for a child in which the teacher and the parent have completely different approaches? How can we tackle that and come up with a compromise while still respecting everybody's perspective at the table?
So, you know, there will be certain things in the IEP which maybe, you know, the school might not agree for. You know, they might have their own reasons. But the thing is, as a parent, you have a right to know as to what the reason is or what the reasoning is behind that. So what I suggest is, you know, if they say that something is not possible, then it's, you know, instead of getting defensive and, you know, trying to be rude and everything, you know, try to, you know, see if you can come to some kind of a compromise, you know, see what are some other options available. If they cannot provide option A, then maybe is there option B or option C? And then come to some kind of agreement where the child still gets the help they need. And that way, you know, both the parties are satisfied.
I think that's a great point. Instead of it just being a, no, we're not going to do that, being able to say, oh, I don't think this works, and having a reason for why you don't think it would work, but let's try this instead, because we always want to be moving forward. And so I can see from a parent perspective, it's just like a roadblock when the team's like, no. So if they can already have an alternative to try, that can keep things moving forward.
That's correct. Yes.
And then sometimes once you've been, or if you're a teacher at a higher level, so you're not necessarily the first or second IEP team that the parent is interacting with, sometimes parents have had a really bad experience prior to getting to you. So they're with a different teacher, they're at another school, and they have no trust, they have no relationship, and you're now receiving that family. If we're in that situation, what can we do to regain and rebuild trust with a family that feels that they were let down by a previous team?
So nowadays, you know, I'm sure, Nicole, you have seen there are a lot of IEP, I think, specialists who are there, which I don't think was available back in the time when Arian first started the IEP process. Or I don't think this is very common in Canada. It's not like the US, you know, maybe the process is a bit different. So if the, you know, parents were not satisfied with the team in the first place, you know, due to previous bad experience, maybe the school teacher can suggest to the parent, not everybody will be able to afford that kind of a service, or maybe not everybody will be in favor of it, but maybe, you know, they can contact an IEP advocate who might be able to review the child's IEP and see, you know, how to better it. If there are things in there which the parents don't agree with, you know, how to come to some kind of a compromise wherein, you know, the goals are still functional, the child is still learning as per his individualized plan, but then, you know, try to slowly build that relationship with the team. So, you know, trying to be more open with the team, trying to getting that parent input statement, you know, which is always sent home before the IEP meeting, wherein, you know, the parents have a option to ask questions, you know, try to ask a lot of questions. If the parent doesn't want to take a IEP advocate's help, then maybe, you know, they can take a trusted family member along. So, you know, that way you're not alone. There is somebody else, they, you know, who is there with you. And that way, you know, slowly start building that relationship. So don't wait for that meeting, but, you know, start building that relationship before you go for the meeting. So that way, you know, when you are in the process of that meeting, you know, hopefully you both are comfortable enough because the lines of communication have been open, and maybe, you know, at that time you can brainstorm some strategies which can help your child.
That's a great point. And I think that's a great point to share for any families that are tuning in, because I go to IEPs now, not even necessarily as an advocate role, but just as a secondary support for parents, because sometimes it is really overwhelming and a mom just wants someone else to be able to take notes. So afterwards, I can say, this is what I heard, because it is an emotional process for a parent to come to an IEP. For me, it's just the child I'm working with. For you, it is your child. Mm-hmm. And so I think just having somebody else at the table that's there just for you, just for your perspective, can help parents tremendously in those really intensive situations.
That's correct. You know, I think that's so important, you know, for the IEP. I think just, you know, having somebody else with you, it's like having a moral support. You know, you're not alone. You don't feel overwhelmed, you know, because like you said, you know, it's my child at the end of the day, you know, of course. So yes, the teachers do love the child and they want to do the best. But, you know, as a parent, you know, it's a different perspective for a parent. So, you know, when you hear all these things about your child not being able to do XYZ, even though we know as parents, yes, you know, my son has particular strengths and weaknesses, but to hear it from someone else, and that's the only thing you hear, you know, nothing positive. It's only, you know, the whole meeting, you know, everybody, all they are saying is just the things your child is not doing. I think that puts a parent in a very difficult situation. And I think that's not a very good situation for anyone. So, you know, as I said, so that way it's always nice to have a second person. And I also say that, you know, always put everything in writing, because if it's not in writing, you know, it's not going to be done. So even if it's a minor, small thing, but make sure that it's documented, you know, via email trail or something, you know, like a message, anything. But as long as, you know, you can go back in the future and refer to it. So, hey, this was the paper trail, you know, these are the things we agreed on, you know, for some reason, you know, maybe we agreed on three things, but, you know, they only did two things. But at least that way you can go back and, you know, ask the team as to why number three was not done. But, you know, if everything was in just a verbal agreement and, you know, you don't have anything in writing, you know, that, you know, it might slip from their head, from your head. And, you know, in the end, it's the child who is not going to benefit from it.
Absolutely. I'm a huge advocate for documenting everything for the exact reasons you said. Also, your teacher could not be there tomorrow. So you want to have stuff documented so that way anybody who's walking into the room, mm-hmm. knows exactly what's going on with the child. That's a really important piece that I think sometimes people miss, especially if they are doing more phone or face-to-face conversations.
Still, that's correct.
Helps a lot.
That's correct, yes.
Is there anything else that comes to mind when we're looking at building that relationship between families and the school that you want to highlight in today's podcast?
So just one thing I would like to say that, you know, to the teachers, I know everybody is busy these days, special education classrooms, they are busy. There are so many students on all different levels. Everybody has a different requirement. So the teachers are really busy and overwhelmed. But, you know, even if they could just, you know, maybe take out 30 minutes in a month, you know, not even in the week, but just in a month to, you know, get to know their children's parents, or maybe, you know, have some kind of a class, I don't know what's that called, but, you know, it's like a class forum, you know, wherein the parents can share the concerns, the teachers can share the concerns, or maybe just have a communication book, you know, like for me, Arian is not able to say, you know, what did he do in school? And I would definitely like to know. So, you know, even if it's just like a one page short thing, you know, today I did this, you know, I think that will go a long way to, you know, help teachers and parents build that collaborative relationship, which is so important for the success of our children.
Absolutely. That's another great piece of advice. And as you said in the beginning, you've got a podcast with so many more great pieces of advice. So I'll be sure to link everything she has below, that podcast, that blog, her social media. And thank you so much for coming on. It's so nice to hear the parents' perspective. And I hope everyone is able to take something away from this podcast and apply it to the relationships with families that they're building in their classrooms right now.
Thank you so much, Nicole. I really appreciate this opportunity for speaking to the parents from a parent's perspective, whether it's IEP, conflict resolution. So that way, hopefully, you know, today's podcast has helped a lot of parents, you know, to understand exactly how to build that collaborative relationship between teachers and parents. Thank you so much for giving me the opportunity. I really appreciate it.
You are so welcome. Thank you for tuning in to today's episode. I hope you guys found something useful, and you can always come visit me on Instagram at Adaptation Station for more content all about work and life. I hope you guys join me for the next episode, and have a good one.